Ukraine says it's regained territory across several regions, including Kharkiv, a significant setback for Russia. So is this a turning point in the conflict, and how will Moscow respond? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fuliba Thibault. After nearly 7 months of fighting, Ukraine has finally begun to regain some of the territory it lost to Russia. It says its forces are continuing their rapid advance in several areas, including the northern Kharkiv region, in the past few days, forcing Moscow to pull back its forces. It's raised the question of how far they can go. Now, in response to those gains, Ukraine says Russia is attacking its power and water supplies in Kharkiv. Officials say missile strikes caused blackouts in several areas, including the main city. Power was restored in Dnipropetrovsk, Donetsk and Sumy by midnight on Sunday, but Kharkiv remained in darkness. An estimated 9 million people were affected, including in areas controlled by Russia. Now, despite the days of battlefield setbacks, the Kremlin's top spokesman insists the war is on track, saying the special military operation is underway and will continue until the goals that have been set are achieved. Al Jazeera's Hoda Abdelhamid has more now from Kharkiv.
Since the beginning of September, the Ukrainian army has been carrying out this counteroffensive in the northeast of the country, taking by surprise everyone, especially when it comes to the speed at which it has been able to recapture territory occupied by the Russian army, some 3,000 square kilometers, according to the chief of staff here. Now, the Russians on their side are saying that they're actually pulling out and regrouping to concentrate on the Donbass region further east in Ukraine. But it seems that the Ukraine had managed to trick the Russians in the sense that they were talking about a counteroffensive in the south of the country, in the Kherson region. And some are saying that the Russians had actually pulled out some of their troops from this side of the country to beef out their presence in the Kherson region. Nevertheless, at this point, the Ukrainians have managed to reach some strategic towns like Kupiansk and Izium. If they manage to fully control those towns, well, it's a big blow for the Russians, who use those places as logistical hubs and backup for their troops that are based in the Donbass region. The question now is, will they be able to hold all this territory, and what is Russia's next step? Already, Russia has shown that it will continue hitting cities. A critical infrastructure was struck, plunging Kharkiv and other regions here in the east in darkness. Just yesterday, people here wondering what will be the next move. Hoda Abdelhamid for Inside Story.
Well, Russia has acknowledged its losses in Ukraine's northern Kharkiv region. A Russian-installed official there says Ukrainian forces outnumbered Russian troops in the counteroffensive, retaking swathes of land. Since early September, Ukrainian troops have advanced rapidly. Areas that took Russia months to seize have been retaken in just days. Ukrainian flags are now flying in the cities of Izium and Kupiansk, both on railway lines that serve as a supply route for Russian troops. Ukraine says it has also made gains in the south near Kherson, but at a slower pace. Well, let's bring in our guests now. In Lviv, Mykhailo Venesky, political commentator and professor at the National University of Kyiv Mohyla Academy. In Moscow, Viktor Olevich, he's a lead expert at the Center for Actual Politics. And in Oxford, Samuel Romani, associate fellow at the Royal United Services Institute. Gentlemen, welcome to you all. Thank you very much for joining us on Inside Story. Mykhailo, in Lviv, let me start with you, if I can. Remarkable advances by the Ukrainians. How have they been able to make these breakthroughs so quickly?
Well, in fact, at the end of the day, we've been preparing for this for a very long time. As you mentioned in the first segment of the program, we were expecting a counter-advance or a counter-attack in the south. Clearly, that has probably diverted some of the Russian forces away from defense around the northeastern part. It is important to note that the people that are actually on the ground liberating the areas of Kharkiv Oblast are actually not regular army soldiers. These are people from the territorial brigades. In other words, these are people that volunteered after the February 24th. They received significant amounts of training in the last 6 months, and they're very, very motivated to liberate the occupied lands of their country. Mm. And I think I also want to say that the fact that it has been going very, very quickly has actually been a surprise, not only to those of us that are observing it, it's actually been a surprise to the Ukrainian Central Command. They were expecting this offensive to last until the end of September. Well, as we see, it's gone a lot quicker than expected. A lot of really motivated people.
What's helped them? What's played in their favor, you think?
Well, there's two things. First of all, they've got a lot of support from the local population. I mean, the local population in Kharkiv Oblast has absolutely no desire to be occupied by the Russians. And they are obviously greeting the Ukrainian forces as liberators. Secondly, the Ukrainians have a strategy of attack, and that is, or a strategy of military action, and that has been proven very effective. It's a strategy of decentralization. It's a strategy of, if you like, network kind of actions. Central commanders give sort of general directions, and then the people on the ground themselves are making the decisions. And they're very motivated and very well trained.
I imagine the military support provided by the West has also helped, but we'll come back to that in just a moment. Let me bring in Viktor in Moscow. Viktor, Russia's admission of a withdrawal in Izyum is significant because this was, of course, a major military hub for Moscow. The Russians say they are regrouping, but I wonder, how is this being viewed in Moscow? What is the reaction there? And how is the Kremlin explaining these setbacks?
Well, this is not the first setback in Russia's military operation in Ukraine in the last 6 months. Several months ago, Russian forces retreated from the Kiev, from the areas of Kiev and Chernihiv regions that they controlled. Later on, the Zmiyny Island had been lost by the Russian forces. And now we are witnessing a retreat from the Kharkiv region, from those areas of the Kharkiv region that Russian forces controlled. This is being openly discussed on various panels, and this is being openly discussed on Russian television, in Russian media. There are different reactions, but what is important to state is that Russia is not going to be defeated on the battlefield. Russia is a great power, and it cannot afford a military defeat.
But how is the Russian defense ministry explaining these retreats? How is it justifying these retreats?
Well, the Russian defense ministry is being tight-lipped. It is saying that a retreat has happened to prevent a large loss of personnel, and that is about it. But it is being discussed on various levels, and it is, again, it is important to note that this is not the end of Russia's efforts in Ukraine, and Russia will continue with its special military operation in Ukraine until it either reaches its goals that were set in the beginning, which seems to be very difficult at this point to forecast, or if a solution, if a diplomatic solution is found between a solution that would involve both Russia, the West, and Ukraine.
Samuel.
And the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, just yesterday said that Russia is still looking for a diplomatic solution to this crisis.
Solution and whether talks can still happen at this stage. Samuel Romani, let me bring you into the conversation. As Viktor said there, it's not the first time that we're seeing a retreat from Russian forces. How significant are these recent gains by the Ukrainians in the wider conflict? Is it even more significant, do you think, than the Russian retreat from Kyiv back in March?
Well, the Russian retreat from Kyiv back in March was a major recalibration of the mission. It marked the end of phase one of what they called the special military operation and the start of phase two. So it implicitly meant that for the foreseeable future, regime change in Kiev, the overthrow of Zelensky and his replacement by a pro-Russian figure like Viktor Yanukovych or Viktor Medvedchuk or someone of that ilk who had more grassroots support was not possible. So both of them are very significant, but significant for different reasons. When it comes to the recent events in Kharkiv, the Russians' military establishment appears to have been blindsided, because you see it from Russian Telegram, Russian military experts were warning that what Ukraine was doing in Kherson was only the first phase of the operation. It was a bit of a feint. The real focus would be on a blitz for Kharkiv, and it appeared as if the Russian defense ministry was caught off guard, and now they've lost their supply lines. So it's quite complicated also for their campaign in Donetsk, because Kupiansk and Izium are very important for the offensive operations that they're carrying out in places like Bakhmut and Soledar. Mm-hmm. And it's also coincided with Ukraine breaching into Lyman potentially, and meaning that Russia and Donetsk will be fighting an offensive operation and now a defensive operation at the same time.
Strategically, Samuel, what are the Russians missing right now?
Well, strategically, one of the things I think that they're having a bit of difficulty with is now supply lines. And they're going to have to rejig and figure this out, because we've seen Mi-26 helicopters, which can carry between 90 and 135 personnel, being carried over to bring supposed reinforcements into Kharkiv. But the problem is those helicopters are very vulnerable to man pads and other defensive equipment that the Ukrainians have managed to get from NATO countries. So they're having a bit of difficulty now in terms of making sure they don't have a repeat of what's happened in Kherson, where you have 20,000 troops stuck there and all the bridges are destroyed and they're trying to build a pontoon ferry and the Ukrainians attack that too. And that's their initial problem, I think, right now. Mm. And also, they need to be careful about where the Ukrainian counteroffensive is going to happen next. Some people think it might go through Vuhledar and into Donetsk. There's apparently a movement into Luhansk, allegedly, if you believe the Luhansk governor, Sergei Haidai, into Lysychansk. And then there's the campaign in Kherson. Ukraine might come from multiple axes or might unexpectedly concentrate on one and leave Russia blindsided again. So guessing Ukraine's next move is very difficult for the Russians.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the sort of support Ukraine has been getting from the West. Ukraine's recent gains have been largely due to the huge amount of Western military aid it's received in the past few months. Let's take a closer look at the numbers. In total, more than 30 countries have provided military equipment. The U.S. has contributed the most by far, with at least $12.5 billion in military aid. Poland follows behind, supplying weapons worth $1.8 $3 billion, and the UK has pledged the third largest amount with weapons worth $1.36 billion. But Ukraine's president has appealed for more funding, saying the monthly cost of defense was about $5 billion. Mykhailo Vaneski, I saw you shaking your head there. You don't seem to agree with me that Western military support is indeed what is helping Ukraine right now regain the territory it's lost.
No, I agree with you that Western military support is absolutely key, and that we're receiving, and we're very grateful for the fact that we're receiving a very large amount of ammunition, of equipment, etc. And this is one of the reasons that I vehemently disagree with Victor, who says that the Russian army cannot be defeated on the battlefield. It can be defeated, and we will see its defeat in the next little while. The important thing that you understand is that this particular gain in Kharkiv, in fact, was not really supported by Western military equipment. The Western military equipment that has come into the country was concentrated largely in the south, in the Kherson region, and it has been used for example, the HIMARS systems, in other words, the multiple rocket, very, very accurate multiple rocket systems, have been used for attacking supply lines in the south. In the eastern part of the country, in the northeast specifically, we've been seeing actually a battle basically with old Soviet-era equipment, because these have been, as I mentioned before, the territorial brigades that are actually doing the fighting. Yes, they have some man pads. Yes, they have some of the mobile equipment, javelins and that sort of thing that were supplied at the beginning of the war. Mm. But this is not really recent stuff. Right. What is, I think, really phenomenal is that if we look at the amount of captured Russian equipment in the last 2 weeks, those numbers, the number of anti-tank, or excuse me, of anti-personnel or personnel carriers, tank weapons, and ammunition, actually outnumbers the amount of aid that we've been getting from the West. So, in fact, the largest supplier of military equipment to the Ukrainian armed forces at the moment is Russia.
Victor, your response.
Well, Russia cannot afford a defeat in Ukraine, because a defeat in Ukraine would mean very serious political consequences in Russia itself. And of course, Russia is going to do everything it can, and the Russian armed forces are going to do their utmost to prevent a defeat in
Ukraine. How do they
Ukraine.
Do that? How does Russia that do that See, when those... it seems to be short on weapons, short in ammunition, and also short of soldiers? How are they going to achieve this objective, the objectives of this special operation, as they're calling it?
The initial objectives of the special military operation that were outlined by the Russian president in February are at this point difficult to achieve. The objectives now are somewhat more limited. But we see the same, we see a very bellicose rhetoric from both sides, a rhetoric which cannot be realized on the front. Mm-hmm. When we discuss Russian objectives from February 24th and how unlikely it is that they will be achieved in the near future, we have to also look at the objectives that Ukrainian officials are putting before their forces today and how unrealistic those objectives are. We see Ukrainian officials who say that their objective is to take Crimea or to take the Donetsk and Luganansk regions. But there is something very different about Crimea and the Donetsk and Luganansk regions from the Kharkov
Mikhailo
region
disagrees,
that has just been
disagrees
taken by
you.
The Ukrainian forces.
Mikhailo, your response.
Different. Let me explain for a second.
Excuse me.
What's different is
it's
that Crimea is ethnically
Crimea.
Russian.
It's not about taking Crimea or taking Donetsk. It's about liberating those areas that have been occupied by Russia since 2014. And this has nothing to do with ethnicity or language. And I do want to say that one of the original objectives of the special military operation, in fact, invasion, was demilitarization. Well, my dear Russian friends, you're doing a wonderful job of it. You're demilitarizing yourself on Ukrainian soil, and in fact, supplying the Ukrainians with your wonderful weapons, and at this point, running away from the battlefield. The objective of liberating occupied territories on the Ukrainian side has not changed since 2014. It's something that we have been ongoing and going after in a very... Crimea is Ukrainian.
Okay, Samuel, before I bring you back into the conversation, I'll just allow Viktor to respond to what Mikhailo has just said there. The objective, and also, Mikhailo, I want to hear from you whether people still think this is a special operation in Russia because this is now an all-out war from the looks of it.
The official Ukrainian statements on the need or the wish to take back Crimea are militarily unrealistic. This is not going to happen. What's happening is that both sides are setting up unrealistic objectives. And it seems that one of the ways that is still open to resolve this conflict is a diplomatic solution. But that solution, the diplomatic solution, is only going to be able to be achieved if the West gives it a green light. It was the Ukrainian side and it was the West that brought an end to the negotiations process that was launched in Belarus in early March and then continued in Istanbul in Turkey.
Samuel,
it was the Ukrainian side that left those negotiations.
Okay, accusations and counter-accusations, of course, when it comes to who left the negotiations and who doesn't want to talk. Samuel, I want to bring you into the conversation on that point of negotiations. Do you think now is a good time to resume talks and negotiations to end the conflict? Or is Ukraine now in a position that it feels that it no longer needs to negotiate?
Well, I think that there's been a bit of radicalization on both sides. So if we look at some of the rhetoric, even in Russia, after the defeat in Kharkiv, you see people like Dmitry Medvedev from the Security Council talking about how our ultimate goal is the total capitulation of Ukraine, and the ultimatums, that as Zelensky calls them, that we offered them are just like children's play. Mm. And on the other hand, you see the Ukrainians saying that there's no use in dialogue with Russia until because we need to focus on liberating all of our territory, including Crimea. And given the fact that there's a rather extreme rhetoric on both sides against negotiations, I think it's going to be very unlikely to see diplomacy and dialogue come forward. The Russian terms in particular seem to be quite unrealistic. If you listen to Leonid Slutsky from the State Duma, they're talking about the complete denazification of Ukraine, which would imply effectively Zelensky abdicating and some kind of a regime change or some kind of extinguishing of Ukrainian culture to some degree. So there's a bit of a real sense of maximalism coming from Russia. I think that it's unlikely that we'll see peace talks being held. Turkey has expressed some optimism that we could have talks based on the Black Sea grain deal to apply to other theaters, like the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, and then maybe towards a broader settlement.
Right.
But they seem to be standing alone in that one. So, and I also think the Ukrainians now have a sense of confidence that they can really win this militarily, even if it takes months or even longer than that. And I think that it's going to be ultimately going to be fought on the battlefield, not the bargaining table.
And how safe, Samuel, do you think Putin is in all of this? There seems to be cracks now in the narrative.
Well, there are cracks in the narrative, but the cracks in the narrative are not coming from liberals, right? It's not the Alexei Navalny's. It's not people having anti-war demonstrations. The cracks are coming from the hardliners
who wanted
to really see Russia, exactly, want to see Russia go all the way to Kiev. Russia will win this war with the maximal objectives that were stated by Putin in February 24th. And also many people who are calling now for a total mobilization. So it's like the former Donbass commander, Igor Strokov-Gurkin, and Ramzan Kadyrov, who want a reevaluation of the Russian Ministry of Defense's strategy. And a lot of the blame is being placed on Sergei Shoigu, who is a civilian, he's an emergency minister, he wasn't actually a military personnel, and not necessarily on the head of Vladimir Putin at this time.
Right.
So Putin seems to be shielded from some of the criticism. It's going more to the defense minister.
All right. Victor, in Moscow, there is indeed talk of total mobilization from the hawks in Russia. Are we going to see a conscription now of Russian soldiers? And are Russians ready to fight for Russia?
The Russian government at this point is not looking to impose total or mass mobilization in Russia. This would have significant consequences for the Russian economy. It would take a number of able-bodied men from their positions at various Russian economic industrial organizations and put them on the front. Russia would also have to provide all of those new conscripts with weapons systems and other military equipment. At this point, this may simply not be available.
Mm.
So Russia initially,
how are they gonna win this war?
When the special military operation... Well, at this point, it is important for Russia not to be defeated. And Russia is going to do its utmost not to suffer a defeat in Ukraine. You see, a lack of a defeat in Ukraine does not mean is not the same as achieving all of the goals that were set out on February 24th. So both sides are essentially, both the Russian side and the Ukrainian side, are the goals that were initially set or are now being set by the Ukrainian side are unrealistic. It is, again, I will repeat, it is hard to imagine that Russia in the near future will be able to get a regime change in Kiev. And at the same time, it is highly unlikely that the Ukrainian side will be able to achieve all of the military goals it is setting out.
Okay.
It would simply be next to the chances of regaining Crimea for Ukraine are next to nil.
Okay, Mykhailo, I'm going to give you the last word in Lviv. What else is likely to shape the situation on the ground and elsewhere?
Well, I'm very pleased that according to our colleagues in Moscow, the goal now of the Russians is not to win the war; it's to not be defeated. Well, I want to that was actually a very, very poignant point made by Victor. Well, in this case, the Ukrainian side is looking for victory. And victory for us is very simple. It's regaining the territories that have been occupied illegally by Russia. That includes all of the territories that were demarcated and have been internationally recognized since 1991. It includes Crimea. Whether this is resolved 100% militarily, we will see. Mm. This is not a war that is going to end soon, unfortunately.
Okay.
This is probably going to last for a while longer, but I have no doubt about the fact that the turning point has, in fact, been reached.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for a great discussion. Mykhailo Vineski, Viktor Olivich, and Samuel Romani. And thank you, too, for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can, of course, also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fully Bat Thibault, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.